Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The Gaslight Cabaret Festival returns to the Gaslight Theater this week. Before his retirement, St. Louis on the Air contributor Steve Potter sat down with two of the featured performers.
The festival begins this weekend and continues for 7 weekends between now and November the 10th. Today, though, we're going to jump ahead and highlight the weekend of November 3rd and 4th. The show is called Broadway's Greatest Hits of All Times, featuring Farrah Alvin and William Michaels, who join us now on the phone from New York. Welcome both of you to St. Louis on the Air.
Hi, thanks.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
We're doing very well. Thank you so much. Farrah, let me start with you. You and William have a little bit of history. I'm not sure if it's this show, but you've worked together before. Can you tell me your background as far as singing cabaret together?
Sure. So we have a fantastic producer friend here in New York, Scott Siegel, who is affiliated with this particular show we're doing and is helping to produce it. William and I have sung at various venues in New York together at 54 Below, which is a sort of famous supper club here, and at Town Hall many times. We've known each other for a long time. And this is a new sort of incarnation of Broadway's Greatest Hits show, where we'll both be singing across the entire canon of musical theater and some duets as well as some solos with a terrific music director named Mark Hartman. So we're really looking forward to it.
You mentioned 54 Below. I've sure heard of that. We know Marilyn May. We've talked to her a number of times, who performs there. Do you happen to know her?
I've seen her perform. She's a genius. I don't know her personally.
What about you, William?
Oh, absolutely. And she's so much fun backstage. She's the real deal.
I really like her, too. William, what's the story about you and Farrah? How did your professional relationship start?
Well, it is through Scott Siegel. Scott and Barbara Siegel, as Farrah mentioned, are legendary producers here in New York of great concert events. The Town Hall is a historic venue on 43rd Street, kind of Times Square, and historic for political speeches. But now it's famous because of its awesome acoustics and just a great place to showcase classic singing and to just the highest level of musical theater in concert. And also at 54 Below, Farrah and I have appeared in like a whole slew of different themed shows. They're not always focused on the classics, you know, on the greatest of the great and the most famous. But, you know, there's a place for all sorts of programs. And Farrah and I have had the chance, mostly through Scott, to present together.
I think the first time we performed together, William, was probably at Town Hall doing an unplugged show, which is, you know, without any amplification via the human voice. So we're two loudmouths.
That sounds a little challenging.
God introduces it as a sound production by God. It's just, and I think, who knows, I would guess, I'll volunteer myself now, but I bet you in the course of this show, I'll be happy to lay down the mic and just belt. You know, it's not just a matter of singing loudly.
William.
I think you're both up to it.
Okay, come on, let's down. You know, because the classics, the R&H, and Lerner and Lowe, and Jerome Kern and Gershwin and, you know, of course, those folks weren't familiar with amplification. They just, you know, came to be in the latter part of the 20th century. We have the kind of training or the kind of history stylistically as well to support the classics without the mic. And as Farrah mentioned, we do shows called Unplugged. And we sing the whole concert without mic, and that's a joy. It really is. It's a different kind of communicating. Every style has its place, and you wouldn't necessarily want to sing Phantom of the Opera without a microphone because it's part of the style of the composition. But then, by the same token, South Pacific off mic can be just glorious.
Well, when you're singing off mic, do you have to sing louder? Does that change the style or the way you sing or affect your vocal cords in any way?
Yeah, I think you have to. It's just a different technique. Your diction, more than anything, I find that's the biggest thing that has to change because you don't have the microphone so close to your face. We all can control the volume, but I find that's the thing that has to be adjusted the most to make sure everybody hears the words, that it's just not a wash of loud sound.
Well, Mike or no mic, the show that you're bringing to St. Louis is called Broadway's Greatest Hits of All Time. Greatest Hits of All Time? I mean, what qualifies? There are a lot of them, aren't there?
it's a tall order.
What are the ones you're looking most forward to, Sarah?
I mean, I'm looking forward to kind of singing across the, you know, almost 100 years of musical theater. We have some things from Cats and from Guys and Dolls and from, you know, Ragtime and Crazy for You. Sort of every, I would say, as William already mentioned, some of the greatest, you know, composing teams. We're trying to make sure we hit not just songs that people know and love, but all of these great composers, so that the goal for me anyway is that with every song you'll get an oh from the audience, you know, yeah. That it'll be something that rings true for a memory and true for, I mean, maybe it'll be new, maybe some material will be new to people if you're more familiar with an older genre, that the newer things will be new and exciting or vice versa.
Well, I have to ask you, if you're talking about new music, are you going to do a little Hamilton rap or anything?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I won't.
No.
I won't.
Well, I'd like to delve into your backgrounds a little bit in a second, but first let's sample some of your work. Farah, what would you like to share with us?
Well, this is an audio clip of a show that I did that has a kind of cult following. I did it off-Broadway. It's called I Love You Because. And this is this never was a Broadway show, but it's a nice example of the kind of work that I do a lot of, which is a lot of new musical theater, the people that we hope will be the next, you know, Rodgers and Hammerstein writing teams, the next Lerners and Lowes. So this is a wonderful show that I did in 2006. I think, by a terrific composing team called Saltzman and Cunningham, and the song is called Just Not Now.
Stop there, Austin. Hold it. Freeze. Give me a second, would you please? You said a lot there, and I'm just not there. I need to think. Your honesty is real, and it appeals to my emotions, which is great, but I'm sure now's not the time for romantic notions. I want true love someday, but just not now. A picket fence cliche, but just not now. How can I make you see, though this feels right to me, now's not the time to be quite where you are. You're here too soon, and though I know it sounds unfair, if you would wait for me, I swear I'll meet you there. I need some time to heal, and though your love seems real, I'm not prepared to feel the way you do. Let's take this time.
And we're talking with Farah Alvin and William Michaels about their appearance at the Gaslight Cabaret Festival coming up in the first week of November. Farah, how does that song speak to you?
I think that for me, with any good musical theater song, the lyric comes first. And so, you know, we all want to be able to have a melody that's hummable. But as a performer, I would consider myself not just a singer, but really an actor first. And so, you know, with a lyric that's strong and clear and honest and communicative, I think that part of what really makes the something lasting. So that particular song, I just think is a beautiful love song, and I like the sentiment of it. It's an unusual sort of more contemporary sentiment about a love song sort of thing, especially for a woman to sing, to say, this is a wonderful idea, this relationship, but I'm not ready to be in a relationship. That's not really something you get to say very often, and I think it's a feeling a lot of us feel.
Any comments about relationships, William? No, you don't have to answer that. Let's sample some of your work, though. What did you bring with you?
Well, I'd say that the iconic South Pacific song is simply about two people falling in love, a relationship starting in a magical moment when they just happen to see each other across a crowded room. Of course, it's called Some Enchanted Evening.
Some enchanted evening, you may see a stranger. You may see a stranger across a crowded room, and somehow you know even then. that somewhere you'll see her again and again. Some enchanted evening, someone may be laughing. You may hear her laughing across a crowded room, and night after night, as strange as it seems, the sound of her laughter will sing in your dreams.
Well, so far we have a theme of relationships here. Does that continue through your entire performance on this?
If you're going to be inspired to write a song, to write a melody, and to write lyrics, you have to imagine that as the creators of these songs came together, they were inspired by love. And it could be a broken heart, could be the moment when your heart opens up, could be all the hesitation and all the risk-taking that love entails. But you know what? That's our driving force. And the relationship's not just in love and not just in romance, but the relationships in our communities and everything, really, everything comes to the fore these days.
I'd like to talk a little bit about both your backgrounds, if we could. Farah, I believe that you've lived in New York ever since college, is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
But you grew up in L.A.? Your parents were artists of some sort?
Yeah, that's right. Both my parents were visual artists. My father was a relatively famous movie poster artist in the 70s and 80s and early 90s. He's responsible for the artwork for a lot of very famous movies, from the E.T. to Blade Runner to the Disney, the sort of heyday of the Disney animation, like Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin in the early 90s. So he did all of those images that are so iconic that we remember. And he and my mother ran a design firm together in L.A. In Hollywood for 20-something years.
Well, I have to ask you something about your family lore, because I hear, Farah, that you exited the womb with perfect pitch. Now, is that just your mother's story?
You know, that is my mother's story. However, I do understand that from a very, very young age that I did sing in tune. And I'll tell you now that as a mother of a three-year-old, I know that that is unusual. Because I do not
some people
hear
never
singing
get
in my house.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, William, I'm curious about you. Where were your early years spent? And do you have any womb stories of your own?
You know, I love my mom, Marion Michael. She taught me my first song as a kid. But she tells me that when I was born, there was a gallery of interns or doctors, young doctors in the room. And when I was delivered, there was applause. And she says that I gained my addiction right at the first moment. So that's my womb story. I still struggle to stay in pitch.
Yeah, well, I knew there was one.
That's not true.
Hey, Farah, did growing up in L.A. have anything to do, do you think, with your career path? You know, I think you started, like, doing open mics when you were 10. I wondered if you had, you know, like, stage parents or something like that.
You know, my mom was, the sort of passive-aggressive stage parent. You know, growing up in a show business town, I wanted very much to be a performer from a very young age, but I was tall. I mean, I'm still tall for a woman, but I was tall at about age 10. I was super tall. And it's beneficial to be short and small if you're going to be in show business, because they can... What? Well, if you're a child, because they can cast a 12-year-old to play a 9-year-old, and the 12-year-old can work longer hours. So I was kind of, I know, horrible, right? But true. So I didn't really have a lot of performance opportunities being the sort of the tallest 10-year-old around. And so my mom, it's ridiculous when you think about it. My mom was looking for places where I could sing. And the best options were at like open mics, cabarets, and like gay bars around Los Angeles. And obviously I was too young to be in there. So in some places I would go and I would stand in the kitchen. And then it would be my turn to sing, and I'd go out, and I would sing, like, either, this is a definitive moment in my career, either Johnny One Note or, like, whatever Whitney Houston song was popular. And then I would go, and then we'd go home, and I would go to the fifth grade the next day.
Wow.
So, That's where I started, mostly out of necessity. And then weirdly, I mean, L.A. being a show business town, I just, my heart was in, I guess, maybe just staying up late. So that's what brought me to New York more than anything else, and wanting to really be in the theater.
And William, where did you begin, and were you born with a baritone?
No, I didn't. I was not born with a baritone. But yeah, but there was one summer right before high school. Then I went from alto to baritone. I have never looked back and regretted not having ever been a tenor. Never regretted that one. My family sang, my dad sang, my uncles, my grandfather sang, not so much professional. My dad was an attorney. I shouldn't say that. His brother was a Metropolitan Opera bass. But my grandfather was all semi-professional, and so I heard that growing up. And interestingly, the quality, the sound quality, seems to be very inherited. But then studied classic musical theater and opera for a while, but found my niche and employment doing musical theater, and have had wonderful opportunities doing that. And from that has grown a concert career. I've performed with a lot of symphonies in St. Louis and all across the country and around. And, you know, in a concert like this, you get a chance not to stick to one composer and lyricist. You can just choose your favorites.
Right.
And that's part of the joy of doing concert work.
Let's share more of your work. William Michaels, how about one more from you?
Well, you know, as an actor, we kind of hold the mirror up to ourselves, and we examine who we are and who we dream to be, who we want to be. One of the most important songs, I think, in musical theater touches on that idea, how we can imagine ourselves to be better people tomorrow than we are today. The role of Don Quixote or Miguel de Cervantes in Man of La Mancha really, really addresses that whole thing, and I don't think there's a more satisfying role for me on stage. And this is the final bit for the song that we all know as The Impossible Dream.
To dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave cannot go, to right the unrightable wrong, to love pure and chaste from afar, to try when your arms are too weary, to reach the unreachable star.
To wrap things up, Farrar and William, a couple of interesting just little side notes for you, and I wouldn't normally bring up politics, but William, I have to ask you, you've got a little background in that, singing on Capitol Hill for politicians and things.
You know, there's a certain reverence for the system, for our government, and I had the chance to sing for a bipartisan congregation of our lawmakers in the Capitol. That was at the time when I was doing a performance at the Kennedy Center, a show called The Scarlet Pimpernel, and it was very dramatic, very theatrical. At that particular moment, there was no political statement being made, but there sure is a lot to be said. And hopefully, as we dream impossible dreams and imagine better tomorrows than today's, I hope that this art that Farrar and I do will carry us on to make the world a better place.
Well, those are great thoughts. And Farrar, I have to ask you something. You sort of have another life, and I wonder if you have any diet tips for me.
Don't eat anything that you can't pronounce.
You're a nutrition counselor on the side.
That's correct, yeah, and a yoga instructor, so, and a mom, so I wear a thousand hats, sometimes all at the same time.
One final thing. What's special about performing cabaret in tandem for you both?
Well, I would say performing for an audience of people who've worked in the radio industry for 35 years and then finally have a chance to retire and sit back and enjoy and be an armchair critic. Steve, I think that's going to be one of my greatest joys. Do you know anybody who might be like that in our audience when we get down there?
Do you know anyone that fits that bill?
You're not talking about me, are you?
I'm talking about you, my friend.
Who told you that?
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Get a little birdie.
Yeah, maybe I'll go into cabaret singing. I don't know. But first I have to learn how to.
You've got that sonorous voice.
That's right. I said you've got a mellifluous voice. That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah.
Were you born with a microphone? Is that your room story?
I've got lots of stories, but unfortunately our time is done.
Oh.
We want to thank you both, and we really look forward to seeing you in November, and thanks for those comments. Wish you the best. Thanks so much.
Thanks, too.
Steve.
That was Steve Potter speaking with Farrah Alvin and William Michaels, who will be in St. Louis to perform at the Gaslight Cabaret Festival on November 3rd and 4th at 8 p.m. at the Gaslight Theater on Boyle. The festival begins this Friday and Saturday with jazz singer Paula West. For more information, go to stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.
I want so much to say, okay, I love you too. I will, but not today. You know, I know you do. And though it's hard, you must control your heart and trust. I want to be